Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to the next step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. No, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week free of charge, either as a podcast on epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast that looks at the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. Polished up for today, and we call that polished look Armadoxy. We're inviting you to take a step with us right now as we explore today's topics. This podcast is being brought to you by the good folks at epostle.net. That's Apostle with an E, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic Universe. If you're ready, let's take the next step. Well, even if you're not ready, well, we're so glad you're with us today. What is that, if you're ready? What is that supposed to mean, huh? As of course you're ready. This is a podcast. You have to be ready to listen to a podcast. It's not like, you know, a radio show. It's not like a TV show that's being broadcast out there. This is a podcast. I mean, complete flexibility on your end. You decide, not me, not some company. You decide when you want to tune me in or tune me out. I hope you don't do that. Don't touch that button right there. Oh, I'm so glad you're with us today, and you've been with us this past week. What a week! What a wild week it's been. Did you catch last night's Questions of Faith? Wow. Jehovah's Witness, we had our guest, Father Sarkis Petoyan. He is an archpriest of the Armenian Church, and he gave a very interesting, informative talk about the Jehovah's Witness, which at least for me left me with a lot of questions, a lot of unanswered questions. And those unanswered questions, I think, are the platform on which I built my work. So it was an important lecture. It gave me a lot to think about. If you didn't catch it, I'm sure it's archived somewhere. It should be, right, Susie? Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's on our Ustream channel. So you can go to epostle.net and then go to broadcasts, and from there just follow the links and it should be up there. It should be archived. I haven't checked, but there's no reason why it shouldn't be, let's say it that way. But it was a very interesting lecture, and I want to share with you some thoughts. Well, that'll come up in the second portion of our show today. Actually, I want to start off by talking about some of the emotional experiences, the mixed roller coaster ride that I had to go through, and unfortunately, tragically, so did so many other people at a very intimate level, and that was, of course, with the passing of this young little girl. I shared with you some of the details over the last few weeks, but I want to share with you more of some pastoral issues and get you to really appreciate not only what faith is about, but how the blessing of Christ, when we talk about how Christ heals, how Christ, you know, we talk about the resurrection of Christ, and that's sort of an abstract idea. Can it really affect us today? And there's probably nothing more profound of an experience where that plays into it than the loss of a child, because the loss of a child goes against everything nature sets up, because it's just the natural order is that, you know, at some point you pass away. and it's your children who take care of you, take care of the committal, take care of the burial, take care of the funeral. And it's the children who have to reconcile with the loss of a parent. And that's only because the natural order is that that's how we live analog, right? We live according to years. So you get to some age and you realize at some age you look at your parents and you say, okay, that's me. At some point I will pass away, and at some point my children will have to deal with my passing. But when a child is lost, it goes against the natural flow, the natural order. And it's very difficult to reconcile, if at all you can reconcile with that reality. I mean, let's say that too. But for our conversation, let's just say it, that we try to reconcile. I mean, we're looking for an equilibrium. We're trying to make sense out of all this, even out of the senseless. Who was it? Immanuel Kant. Didn't he say, human reason is troubled by questions that it cannot dismiss, but also cannot answer. And this is like the hardest, when you don't have answers. And I was faced with that. Now, as a priest, 30 years, you know, 30 years I've been a priest, and this is one of the hardest things to sit with parents. And I've got to be honest with you. This came to me early in my ministry. I mean, it came because of a loss of my own child, but also dealing with so many families. And because of that, it's been something that keeps reoccurring. It keeps hitting me. But also, I think that I've gotten the tools necessary so that I understand that there is a unique ministry. When we lost our child, I remember thinking that along with my wife, we have a unique ministry to other families, to other people who are suffering with this. And it's a calling nobody wants. But when you do have that calling, you need to be able to be ready. Be ready to not give answers, but to be there. And this is very important. Everybody wants answers. Okay, and you can't be the answer. You cannot give the answer. Because sometimes, be really frank about it, there aren't any answers. We deal with this all the time. And so I want to share with you what happened this week, because there was a bunch of circumstances that I think are just very important in the building of faith. And you got to remember that, you know, we go through this when something tragic like this happens. It hits us and it's a unique event. Don't forget that there are places on this planet, everywhere on this planet, that incidents like this are regular daily occurrences. I mean, think about what's going on in Afghanistan. Just last night, think about the escalation of the activity of the violence in Darfur. I mean, every day there are parents who have to deal with this issue of loss of children. And every day it's a reality throughout the world. It's just different for us, because we could sit back in the comfort of our homes and turn the channel if we don't like what we see on TV. Turn the page if we don't like what we read in the newspaper. Click the mouse button if we don't like what we see on our screen. But that doesn't make it disappear from reality, does it? It is a reality for so many people. And as a priest, I thank God for this opportunity to be able to be with families during their happy times as well as during their sad times. I want to share with you some ideas that came to my mind and just share them. I want to really throw them out because, like I said, you can search for answers all you want. And I learned this long time ago. Sometimes you just need to just accept that this is reality, you know. Especially, you know, if you know how much I am enthused about the universe, about these galactic phenomena that take place up there in the heavens. And, you know, this morning, actually, I was looking at some pictures that had just come back from Australia, Northern Australia, pictures of the solar eclipse. I hope some of you out there in Australia got a chance to see it. I don't know where it exactly hit, but I wish I had known just a little bit before, because on my 30th anniversary of ordination, my parish gave me a trip. And I've been wondering, where are we going to go on this trip? That would have been a really nice trip to take, to go and see the eclipse. But anyway, there's another one coming in 2015, so we'll have to go and see that. That's really one of my dreams, is to see one of those. And, you know, and I've been looking at the pictures of the eclipse, and along with NASA's pictures, there were some pictures from the moons of Saturn, Titan. And you just start wondering, you look out there and you realize that, you know, there are things so vast, so large, so big, and the universe is a giant, giant place. There's so much that we don't know. So why not accept the things that we don't know? And accept that we may never know. But let's accept the things also that we do know and realize that there are powers. There are powers that are really on our side, and that's the power of love. And use that love really to understand where we stand and how we can reconcile with some of this unnatural, seemingly unnatural set of circumstances. It's very much like the Reinhold Niebuhr prayer, you know. I think the Alcoholics Anonymous have adopted it, but you've seen it on cards, it's on keychains, it's sort of like a mantra in a sense. Lord, grant me the wisdom, or grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, right? Serenity, courage, the wisdom. That's what it comes down to. I mean, definitely, death is something you cannot change. And death is a reality. It does happen. Everything that begins, ends. Everything that begins, ends. That's just the order. That's natural law. Okay, so in that order, we need to make sense. We need to reconcile with all of the circumstances. I want to share with you a few things that happened. Again, as I'm saying, it's just really to share from a pastoral point of view. One of them was when this young girl was, I was told that she was in the hospital and she had suffered, and I don't want to go into the details, but she had suffered a set of medical emergencies. And so she was in the hospital on life support. And that particular day that I was going to go, something came up and I couldn't go. The family asked, they were doing some procedures. Family asked if I could go the next day. Now, the next day happened to be Kyud Chodesh, the discovery of the Holy Cross. And I thought that was really, really a beautiful opportunity for us to look beyond the set of circumstances that were there. And I went and I met with the family, I met the little girl, and I shared with them the story of the discovery of the cross. Because here's the opportunity. You see, when they discovered Christ's cross, there was three crosses that they discovered. And as they were looking and pondering which cross is Christ's, the story has it that there was a funeral procession for a little girl going by. And they placed the three crosses on the casket, and it was one of the crosses that resurrected that child. Wow! I don't go to the hospital one day, I go the next day, it's the day that this story is being told. And I shared that with the family, and earnestly we believed, and we prayed for a miracle that we wanted. The miracle, of course, that this child would be revived. The week went by, and we were in touch with the family. And finally, on the last day of that week, I had to revisit that same hospital room. And this time it was because of medical science had gone all to its limits. Okay, there was no hope. Can't even say that word. I can't have a hard time saying no hope. And we prayed with the family earnestly. You know, you believe in the miracle. It's at these moments, okay, the medical science, everything. And this is the time, Christ, if you're going to raise this child. This is it. This is the time. We prayed. One of the grandparents came up to me and says, Why did God do this? And that has to be the ultimate legitimate question, right? That's the ultimate question. Why? And there are so many bad people out there in the world. I mean, if there's justice in the world, I could name a few people out there that are sitting on death row that have been mass murderers, have killed people. I mean, these people are allowed to live, and this little innocent child is sitting in this little bed, and she's about to expire. And you say, why? What's going on here? And you want me to believe in this God? And I have to be honest with you. I mean, the grandmother who asked me this question was doing it with all reverence, because deep down you know that your only salvation is God. But it is a legitimate question. Hey, I got to be honest with you, and I know you've done it too. We've all thought the same thing. Why this evil? And the only thing that I could say, really, the only thing that really I can think of is, well, God didn't even spare his own child. God's child was on a cross. Mary looked up from the foot of the cross and saw her son, who had done absolutely nothing but preach love. And he was on the cross, bleeding, humiliated, and giving his life. God didn't step in. He didn't change the events of the day. Are we talking about a powerless God? Is that what this comes down to? Is he powerless? If he is, then why does he get this title? God! Shouldn't God be all-powerful, almighty? These are questions. And they're very legitimate questions, aren't they? Okay, if you're not, I mean, okay, we understand God can do it, but then why is he called God? Why not just call him, you know, something else? Maybe he's the all-knowing person. But God means that he's all-powerful, supernatural, able to do everything, right? And so that day we said our prayers and we said goodbye to this little girl. This past Sunday, as I was preparing for the sermon for that Sunday, I knew that the funeral for the little girl was going to be coming up in a couple days. So I opened up the lectionary for this last Sunday. Now remember, this girl, I had the one incident where I was able to share with them the story of the discovery of the cross. And now that she's passed away, I'm preparing for the sermon for this last Sunday with the knowledge that a funeral is pending. It's coming up in a couple days and I would have to officiate at that. So I opened up the lectionary reading for this last Sunday, and what is it? If not the story of Jesus raising the little girl. If you're not familiar with this, let me just paraphrase it. Comes to us from the Gospels. In it we see that someone comes up to Jesus and says, "My daughter is dying. Would you please come and heal her?" And Jesus takes his time, and by the time he's up to going to the person's house, someone comes and says, "Don't bother Jesus anymore, she's passed away." This is a 12-year-old girl. And Jesus looks at the man, and the Gospels tell us that he doesn't hesitate. Very assuredly, he turns to the man and says, "Your daughter is not dead, she's only sleeping." And he goes and he finds people weeping. And he tells the people of the household, he says, "Your daughter is not dead. She is only sleeping." And you can imagine their reaction. Laughing. Mocking him. "Who do you think you are? We just checked her pulse. We know death from sleep. We know what the difference is. Don't, who, what are you, some kind of religious fanatic? That's fine. You've got some believers behind you. That's okay. But don't come and tell us what the difference is between death and sleeping. I mean, don't teach us. that there's a, you know, it's the same thing, death and sleeping. It's all the same thing. Who do you think you are? And at that point, what Jesus does, and this is really important, listen to this. He dismisses everyone. He gets everyone out of there except for Peter, James, and John, and the parents of the girl. And he goes into the room. And he says, stop crying. Your daughter is not dead. She's only sleeping. He turns to the little girl. He says, my child, get up. And the spirit, it says, this is, I want you to read it. It's in Luke chapter 8. It says, the spirit returned to the girl. Now, what goes on over here? It's very interesting. Jesus dismissing the people is just as important as the miracle. He refused to allow people with negativity around him. There was a group of 12 disciples that were with him. There was definitely all the aunts and uncles. There was the grandparents. Everybody was around there, but people who had the doubts in their heart. Like any one of us would have. But Jesus knew that at that point, what he needed to do in that room was so important. And what he needed to surround himself with were the people that believed. And I read this story and I thought about the circumstances under which we were going to be in the next few days. The child, the funeral. And I know that everyone believed. We all looked for the miracle. We all wanted to see her healed. We all wanted to see her stand. And we all believed. And I realized that maybe the big miracle was one that we missed. Maybe our senses were just too dull to pick it up, really to understand what's going on. And sure enough, there was a big miracle because we all hoped. We all believed. You see, the little child that was there, she had a life of 5 years. I wish it could have been 90. I wish it could have been 80. We all wish that. But in those 5 years, she came. She got us to believe. She got us to kneel down. She got us to stop from our difficulties, from our problems of everyday life, and realize that life is precious. She got us to pray. And you know what? This is what to me, and well, not to me, actually, this is the definition of what an angel is, right? An angel is a messenger. God's messenger. And she came and she gave us a message to believe, to hope, to have faith, to stop and smell the roses, to realize that life is so precious that it can be here one day and gone the next day. So absorb and take every moment that you can. Hug your children a little bit more. Spend time with the ones that you love. Care for. Embrace them. Hug them. Give them kisses. Flower them with the joy that God has placed in your heart. That to me was the miracle. We received it. She had risen. She was in our midst. She was looking all around us. And when I went to that funeral, that was the message that I was seeing all around me. And in fact, as preparing for this, I get to the funeral and the grandfather expressed himself in those words by saying that, yes, they were looking for a miracle, but the little girl was the angel who had taught them to love, to care. She had taught them so much. And you see, life doesn't work out every way the way we want to. But in the end, you don't need to understand all the pieces of the puzzle. What you do need to understand and focus in on are the important things. The important thing that there is love, that there is a power that is greater. Can God stop the crucifixion? Can God stop the small little incident that takes place on the third floor of a hospital in the middle of a city where people are shooting up each other left and right, and yet in this small little room we're looking for a miracle? Can God do that? I want to believe he can. I want to believe that he can stop wars. I want to believe that he could stop the crucifixion. But that's part of the mystery that I don't understand. But I do know that there's a greater mystery, and that mystery is the mystery of love. And that's what I saw happen. That love was the one that prevailed. because we now were believing. We now understood that this little angel had come and touched us. This little angel had come and given us wings that we needed to fly, to meet with our lives, to understand our lives as a fulfillment of the love that's all around us. I want to take a break right now. Song of the day.
It was written that I would love you from the moment I opened my eyes, and the morning when I first saw you gave me life under calico skies. I will hold you for as long as you like. I'll hold you for the rest of my life. Always looking for ways to love you, never failing to fight at your side, while the angels of love protect us from the innermost secrets we hide. I'll hold you for as long as you like. I'll hold you for the rest of my life. Long live all of us crazy soldiers who were born under calico skies. May we never be called to handle all the weapons of war we despise. I'll hold you for as long as you like. I'll hold you for the rest of my life. I'll hold you for as long as you like. I love you for the rest of my, for the rest of my life.
Paul McCartney. You guessed it. Calico Skies. That is off of album called Flaming Pie. Put a link on our show notes. Do check it out. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit right now. We need to switch gears. This has been getting a little bit emotional for me today. Okay, we are going to switch gears, as promised. Now we're going to be talking about the Jehovah's Witness. There you go. There's a stark contrast right there, isn't it, with what we were talking about? Anyway, this comes because last night we were talking about the Jehovah's Witness and our Questions on Faith series. That's our Bible studies every Wednesday evening. And if you didn't get a chance to tune in last night, it is archived while the song was playing. Susie told me she went in and she researched, and it is up there, so you can check it out. Very informative lecture. Father Sarkis Patoyan discussed the Jehovah's Witness, who they are, giving us the information. And as much as information that he gave, at least in my head, it opened up many, many questions. And those are the questions that I want to share with you. Because I don't want it to sound like a tit for tat, but that's what it came off across, okay? This is what they believe, and this is what we believe. Okay, well, there's a lot of people that have different beliefs, and, you know, this is part of the globalized world in which we live in. You know, we exchange those ideas. But what the danger comes in is, of course, with the Jehovah's Witness, and he so eloquently explained this last night, is when they walk to your house with a Bible in their hand and they tell you that they're Christian, and then they start expounding these beliefs that are the farthest thing from Christianity, you start, you want to defend your faith. And once you start defending your faith, well, you get into that tit-for-tat kind of atmosphere. You're saying, okay, this is what I believe, this is what you believe. And the bigger questions actually came up for me were, why? Why are these people so popular? I mean, here is a seemingly, really, an oddball kind of faith that came about in the last 100 years. It doesn't have a long tradition. It came about with some misguided leadership. I mean, it's just part of the record. They said that the end of the world was going to come in 1914. I know last night Father Sarkis said 25, but I know that their original predictions were 1914, and it came at the dawn of the First World War. And then they changed their predictions to 1918, then 1922, 1924, and so on. They've been predicting the end of the world, and each time it hasn't occurred. They also talk about 144,000 people being saved, and there are 3.5 million people that are part of the Jehovah's Witness. That means, therefore, ipso facto, it is. I mean, do the math. 3.5 million is much greater than 144,000. So obviously, some people will not be able to get into this elite group. Very far from Christian understanding, where we are all invited to the kingdom, and theirs it's 144,000, and having to do with the 12 tribes of Israel and so on. You know, a lot of Jewish history in what the Jehovah's Witness, by virtue of their name too, Jehovah, right? A lot of Jewish metaphors and historical information there. Okay, so why do they have this kind of following? Why is it that you look at their church and you find people that are belonging to their church from all different aspects of life that they are not only following, but they're committed? I mean, they're not running chicken and bingo to keep their doors open. They are providing the money. They are providing the facilities. And not only that, they're giving their lives up to go out into the street and proclaim their message. And the question has to come out, why? And you look at the numbers, 3.5 million worldwide, and you got to look at the numbers of Armenians. At least I do. Okay. You don't have to do anything. I know we got a lot of listeners that are not Armenian. But in your own little communities, okay, why? You know what the rules are. People are not close to religion. And yet the Jehovah's Witness has this following. Same thing with Islam, okay? With all their restrictions, it is the largest growing religion in the world. And it's only natural. Ask these questions. I ask it as an Armenian priest. I see it in the Armenian church. And this is where I want to bring you today, because I know we have people from different backgrounds. I know we have people who are listening here from the Episcopal Church, and I know this, it's the same thing. I know we have some Copts listening to us, and I know it's different. Actually, I'm going to use you Copts as a little bit different way today. But you know what I'm talking about. It's basically within Orthodoxy, within the traditional churches, Roman Catholic, Episcopal, within the traditional churches, quote-unquote, membership is something that you are striving for. You want to build up the ranks, and you will appeal to non-religious means to build up those ranks. And we see this all the time. You know, build a basketball gym and they'll come. You know, show this good movie and maybe people will come. Give a good dinner and people will come. And you've got, seemingly, at least from the outside, you've got these organizations like the Jehovah's Witness that are building up the ranks, basically teaching something that is, well, okay, again, it's a tit for tat, but it's definitely not what I understand religion to be. It doesn't lift up the soul, it doesn't lift up the individual, and in fact divides the families, and you have to question that, right? Jehovah's Witness, you know that. That's part of the game. It's like you're not allowed to participate in family events. Like, you can't go to a baptism of one of the other family members. You can't go to a wedding in another church. You can't celebrate birthdays. You can't do this and that. And basically, I have, at least in the 30 years experience as a priest, I've seen that in too many families. You've seen the breaking apart of the family. So that can't be too healthy To me, that doesn't qualify in the religion category, okay? But again, I don't want to make it a tit for tat. I don't want to say your religion is bad, mine is good, or anything, because you can argue on those things. But there are some basic human levels at which where you can't argue. And that, for instance, is when the family is destroyed. There's nothing good about that. There's nothing good about that. You can't justify that. Okay, so why is it? What's going on? And these are the questions that I have that I want to leave you with today. Last week, my friend Haraj from London, he sent me a video of this Armenian fellow playing rabis. Rabis is it's a genre of music. It's a genre in the Armenian culture. Very popular. And it has its own following. And he was singing songs of praise. Songs of praise to God, to Jesus. And the YouTube video was very interesting for this reason, because you look at the number of hits it has over 30, 40,000 hits, people listening, people enjoying it. Now you go out there and you find, you know, we were talking last couple of weeks, we were talking about this priest of the Armenian church, he had a big following here in the Glendale area. You go and you dig up some of the best people who sermonize, who have videos on the Armenian Orthodox Church on the internet. What's the most you got? 200, 300, 500, maybe 1,000 hits? I know there's one bishop in Etchmiadzin, Bishop Sahag. He does Bible studies, got like 3,000-4,000 hits per video. Wonderful. But what is it about the Rabbi's music that is getting me 40,000-50,000 hits? And I would venture to say it's because, well, it's understandable. It speaks to people, and it allows for, ready for this? Big number one word, participation. So that someone attending is not an observer, but participates. You got a beat. You got a call to be a part of it. And these are all elements of orthodoxy that have been lost. The participation factor. It's been lost because it's just become overwhelmingly symphonicized. By that I mean it becomes like you're going to a symphony, okay? You're going to a concert, to a production. And like any good production, hey, you can go and watch it a couple times. You may enjoy it for a third time. I mean, if it's really got you intrigued, you'll enjoy it for a few times, but you can't do it every week because you're only an observer. You're not a participant. And that's the magic word. Here in Glendale, we have our St. Peter Church, where I serve every Sunday doing the Divine Liturgy, celebrating Divine Liturgy. It's interesting. Being the celebrant, I'm up at the altar and I'm listening. And what's so beautiful is that I listen and it's the entire congregation singing most of the hymns. And so when the entire congregation is engaged, is participating, you have more life in the church. You have people coming and feeling that they are a part of the process. And we've done this, it's not by no accident. Actually, we didn't issue choir robes. Many times people have come to me and, you know, we started this church, St. Peter, 10 years ago. In the past 10 years, I can't tell you how many times people with very good intentions have come and said, we want to donate the choir robes, and I've refused. And I know eventually they're going to win out because, you know, I can't keep going at this level. But I've refused the choir robes. Because the minute you put choir robes on, you're saying, okay, this is an isolated group of people that will be singing and you do something else. Basically, you observe. Participation. Number two, faith, belief. You've got to be convinced of what your product is. If your product is basketball, then make a basketball gym and make it the best one. Okay, this is why sports organizations are great. They will always have better basketball courts than any church can ever have. Now, churches can have basketball courts, but that can't be the primary reason why a church exists. Dinners, banquets, bingo. Monte Carlo will always outdo you. Las Vegas will always outdo you. when it comes to gambling. Don't make your funds by gambling. Make your funds because you believe in what you have. Believe it wholeheartedly. And this is something that we haven't done yet. We are not all convinced, and I see this throughout the whole church. It'll probably be something that I eventually won't be able to live with anymore, but you keep seeing this over and over and over again. And even the new generation of priests and servants. And you can't blame them. It's just basically the faith is something that is secondary to national aspirations. The faith is something that is secondary to, say, like fundraising means. And the whole purpose of fundraising means is to do what? You got to ask that question too. Well, it's survival. It's keeping the institution alive. So faith takes a second role, a second position to the institution. Now, this is not the case in all Orthodoxy. I saw a video that I could not believe just a couple days ago. The Coptic Orthodox, our sister church, we are in communion with the Copts. They selected their next Catholicos. Interesting. No political parties involved. You don't find people. But what they did is they brought a child. This is we'll put a link to this video on our show notes today. They brought a child up, 12-year-old child. They blindfolded him, and then they had him select out of the three candidates one of the balls. And it did look like the priest was guiding his hand. But in all case, you want to believe that, you know, but by the Holy Spirit, he was guided and selected the next pope. Our dear friend Harry has written a couple articles about the next pope. I'm going to put a link to his blogs as well on today's show notes. Do check that out, okay? This is a church that is in communion with us, the Coptic Orthodox. But what does that tell you? It tells you that there's something that they believe, that there is something bigger than themselves, that they are guided by the Holy Spirit, that they are guided, that their church is, in a sense, supernatural. It is not something that belongs to this world, but the blindfolded young boy was basically that symbol of the supernatural, guided and be as a child. Yes, guided by a child. Interesting, huh? It's neat. Check it out. Okay, so all of these, what I'm saying is that participation is important. At the same time, participation means nothing unless you have the faith, unless you really truly believe what you're doing. And so many times in Armenian church, in Greek church, and in most of the traditional churches, you're selling a product that is not your main product. And I think this has been really one of the successes that the Roman Catholic Church has seen in the past several years, is by bringing people back to faith. And I don't want to use this term, but I hope you'll understand it in the context in which I'm saying it. You have to sell your product. You have to sell what you produce. And when you focus on what you've produced and make that the product of choice, make that the one exclusive product that you have, what happens? Your quality goes up. That's true in any business, right? Okay, you can go into a supermarket and find a selection of all kinds of things. You'll find cards in one aisle, you'll find wine in another, you'll find fruits and vegetables, you'll find different types of cleaning products. You may even find a small little aisle that has watches that you may need a watch for the day or something. But if you're looking for a quality watch, where do you go? You go into the watch store. And when you go in there, you find a wide variety of watches. That's their focus. That's what they specialize in. So you're likely to find more quality there than you would at the supermarket. Now, you go into the watch store, you don't expect to find fruits and vegetables. You don't expect to, you don't go there and say, okay, I need a watch, and by the way, give me a pound of olives right now. You don't do that. And the same is true in any other store. You don't have any other business model that follows that except in the church. The supermarket mentality is really what the church has become. We try to give everything. Okay, we can't get them in because of the faith. Okay, let's package some other things to bring them in. You go into a bookstore. Have all kinds of books. The quality, they're there. Every book is there. You can select the books. But you don't go and say, you know, by the way, I also need a washing machine, because you're not going to find the washing machine there. Now, again, you can go into the supermarket and you can find some books. Some, usually paperback, not high quality, but some books. You can also find some washing detergents that might simulate the washing machine experience. But if you need a washing machine, you go to the appliance store. And it's the same thing with church. People who come to church, the reason why you want to come to church is to get some spiritual fulfillment. You want to be tied with something greater than yourself. That's the number one product of the church. It's not all the other things. Now, you may have some of the other things, much like the supermarket mentality, but what happens? Your quality starts going down. And so the quality of each of the products, it goes down. You can have a basketball court, right? But you know that the sports arena next door to you will always have a better basketball court because that's their specialty. So you may gear a basketball court for a few people over there. You may have a nice dinner over there, but you know that the gourmet restaurant down the street will always have a better dinner over there. But you can serve hot dogs, you can serve hamburgers, you can do some things. And it may even be good, maybe tasty too, but that's not your specialty, is it? Because when they want the faith of Jesus Christ, they've come in and looking in the church. You don't expect them to go to the restaurant. You don't expect them to go to the bookstore. You don't expect them to go to the appliance dealer to find faith. And so if we can get into that model where we understand that this is our reason for existence, then you start increasing your quality. Basically, that's the experiment we're running with Armadoxy. We're saying, what if we got rid of all this other stuff and went back to the original roots, Armenian Orthodoxy? What was it? Back in the time of Christ, back in the time of King Apkar, in the time of Dertad and St. Gregory the Illuminator. What was it like for Datevatsi, for Shnorhali? What was it like during the time of the genocide? Can we get and sift out all of the excesses, all of the frills, and really kind of come down to what the faith was about? And you'll find it. That's what Armadoxy is. You find it. It's called love. So this, in a sense, yeah, I have identified it right now. So she's looking at me like, you know what you said. Yeah, I haven't really used that word. Experiment. This is an experiment. And I think it's going pretty good. I think it's an experiment that's working out pretty good. With that, let me let Susie tell you how you can get involved in this experiment, and then I'll come back with some final comments.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vodskin, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. We are now in the fifth year of broadcasting and heard on 6 continents. The next step is entering homes and communities proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution today. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, as well as Facebook and Twitter. There's even an app for your smartphone. We look forward to your participation and words of encouragement. Write to us 24/7 at feedback@epostle.net. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vosgen.
Thank you, Susie. I think you're ready for some rest, aren't you? it's been a long one, hasn't it? I know, this last few weeks, it's just been really, it's been nonstop. And then we've got a few weeks in front of us that are going to be another, well, actually, between now and Armenian Christmas, between now and January 6th, so much is happening. But let me just thank Susie for the reminder, and thank you, thank all of you for all of your generosity, your comments. Just really, you can't believe how much those emails and those comments go to give us the support and the strength. And most importantly, I appreciate all of your prayers, especially for what's coming up. We have an incredible Advent season that we're ready to start this Sunday. And the season of Advent is a time for us to be prepared. There's a message, you'll find it this weekend coming out on the In Step with Christ series, and I want you to listen to it because it's an important one. It really sets the pace of what Advent is. It's so important that we understand that we need to be a participant. We need to participate in our faith. It's not something that's just given to us, something that we react to. And Advent gives us this opportunity. We'll be doing some drives. We have our food drive here locally, and I encourage you to do those wherever you may be, whatever town you're in, whatever country you're in. There's opportunities to reach out to the underprivileged. Please take advantage of this time of Advent season and the holiday season, because around Christmas time, it is festive. It is a wonderful, beautiful time, but with those festivities also, there comes a lot of loneliness for people who don't have families, people who are looking for something else, who've gone through quite a bit during the year, who've suffered losses. And make sure you reach out during this time. Thank God, you know, this week we have Thanksgiving coming up here in the States, and this is an opportunity to thank God for the blessings that we do have, the wonderful blessings. And speaking of that, next Thursday is Thanksgiving here in the United States. It is a holiday, and if all goes well, if my plans go well, I'm hoping to get the next step out Wednesday late night, which will be Thursday for most of you in the world, since we're in one of the last time zones on this planet. But anyway, it will be Thursday very early. Let's say it that way. Okay, very early Thursday morning, so that it can offer also a prayer and opportunity for you to share the next step, to share your faith at the Thanksgiving gatherings, wherever they may be. And I know different countries have different traditions, but it is an opportunity for us to share this tradition with the rest of the world. And I'm planning on doing that next Thursday for a Thanksgiving edition of The Next Step. That being said, there's a lot of opportunities coming up, and we spoke about this young little girl that passed away. I want to tell you that December 9th this year, which is the second Sunday, we have the Katya Hamparyan Memorial Service for Children. If you happen to have a child, such a loss, have gone through this tragedy of losing a young one, please don't hesitate to let me know. You know, send an email to father@epostle.net. You could drop it in the mail, too, if you want a note. And I'm asking for pictures, so that's why I said you could mail it. But, of course, you can always attach it, send it as an attachment, because what we do with the pictures is we have an ongoing slideshow that day. Just to remember, we call it the points of light. These are all lights that twinkle up in heaven. And I'll be talking more about that as we get closer. But I do want to let you know that that is available to all of our listeners. It is called the Children's Memorial Day. It is the second Sunday of December. It has been nationally known for that on that day by a proclamation by President Bill Clinton back in, I believe, 1996 or 97. And since then, we've been celebrating. Yeah, we've been celebrating the lives of these children. I hesitate using that sometimes when we talk about the loss. But you know what? It's just turning out to be a celebration of the life. Yeah, we mourn, we grieve the loss. But we're seeing so much life in these children that cannot die. And that's the life. You know, when you look up at the stars, you're looking at light. You're looking at life. You're looking at energy. And that day when we do the Children's Memorial, that's where we focus in on. we focus in on that. Anyway, I'll be talking more about that, just giving you a little heads up. If you would like to get in on that, please drop us a line again. You could send it to me or send it to feedback@epostle.net, and our dear producer, Susie, will make sure that we get that email. Listen, I want to thank you for joining us today. I want you to get involved at all the wonderful things that we do at epostle.net. That's epostle, which is apostle with an E for electronic and expanding universe. And also at the Mothership in Issues. We've got a lot of interesting things going on about domestic violence, and Darfur is heating up right now too, so we want to be sharing some information, and we'd really appreciate it if you get the word out. You can also, of course, follow along on Facebook, Epostle in Issues, St. Peter Armenian Church, and of course, follow our tweets. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Vi, our webman, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will give thanks at the Thanksgiving edition of The Next Step, and we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.